Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, October 2nd, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, 250 show up at Coltrane hearing in the Tri-Cities. Palouse residents get update on Palouse water situation at the Palouse Basin Water Summit. And Idaho Health Insurance Exchange website opens. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. About 250 people showed up in the Tri-Cities yesterday for a scoping hearing on the proposed Millennium Bulk Coal Export Terminal planned for Longview. The Longview Terminal is one of three planned for the West Coast in Washington and Oregon to ship Powder River Basin coal from eastern Wyoming and northern Wyoming to Asia. Opponents rallied outside the hearing site in Pasco and outnumbered those testifying in favor. Many of the opponents talked about the impact exporting the coal would have on climate change. Those in favor included Franklin County farmer Randy Mullen, who is president of the National Potato Council. Mullen said the increase in coal trains running through the Tri-Cities will help agriculture in central Washington because Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad will be forced to improve their tracks. Another person testifying in favor of the coal trains was Republican Representative Mark Schossler of Ritzville, who represents Pullman and Clarkston in the state legislature in Olympia. Here's Schossler, followed by the youngest person to testify yesterday.
I am in full support of the Millennium Project in Cowlitz County and totally opposed to the expanded scope of review that this project has. If this precedent were to continue, it could affect imports and exports of containers with agricultural commodities, manufactured goods, further hurting commerce in the state of Washington. This is a project that supports jobs. No part of this state has an acceptable unemployment rate. And this is all private sector investment. No one has come to me as a senator and said, please give us infrastructure. This is private sector financing to grow our tax base. As an individual farmer, I've had a shop for 40 years within two blocks of a railroad that currently hauls coal. The extreme claims about coal dust just don't exist two blocks from the main line. I have farmland that we've operated for decades as well within sight of the main line of a railroad that carries coal. We just haven't seen the negative effects that some would say. The precedent, once again, that has been proposed is unfair and burdensome. What commodity, what business will be asked next to go to such an extreme position? So again, in closing, I fully support the Cowlitz County project and totally oppose the expanded precedent here today. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dave. I am here to ask you to stop the coal trains. I need you to help me. My future is in your hands. The future of everyone's children is in your hands. I can't vote. All I can do is trust you to listen and do what is right. I realize that people are worried about money for their families and their children. They want jobs and a prosperous economy. They are worried about right now. But if we do not stop the coal trains, children and their children's children will have a much bigger problem. We might have to conserve our money, but our grandchildren will not have to conserve their environment. Our grandchildren will not have to worry about their air quality, their water quality, and a warming planet. It is your job as adults to take care of children, to think of us. I am asking you to do that now. In the short term, this may seem like a good idea, but in the long term, it will be a disaster. The scope of your EIS statement does not cover your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren. Please be responsible with my future. Stop the coal trains.
And that was a sampling of some of the testimony yesterday at a scoping hearing on the proposed Millennium Bulk Coal Export Terminal planned for Longview. Those against the coal trains included Joel Robinson of Spokane. Here's Robinson, followed by a representative of the Yakima Nation.
I encourage you to please study the impacts of 16 extra coal trains every 24 hours through communities all along the rail line from Montana and Wyoming to Longview. Please study the huge amounts of coal that I found on the banks of the Columbia River near Horse Thief Park that's already there from the current coal trains and what the increased blow off would be. Please study the exponential increase of diesel emissions and the subsequent increase in cancer and lung disease to the thousands of people who live in the rail corridor. Please study the loss of life expected due to ambulances, fire engines, and police cars locked behind coal trains. Please study what happens when a Capesize ship carrying coal capsizes in our pristine waters, spilling the equivalent of a small oil refinery of bunker fuel. Please study the loss of livelihood to our fishermen, tribal neighbors, oyster farmers, tourism towns, due to mercury poisoning and ocean acidification from burning exported coal in Asia. Please study the adverse impacts of climate disruption from burning this coal from Powder River Basin coal on the lives of my 7 nieces and nephews, ages 8 to 18, and on the lives of your children and all the children that belong to all the people, the parents, the grandparents, and the aunts and uncles in this room.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Christina Prozac. I'm the Environmental Review Coordinator for the Yakima Nation, and I've been asked to serve as the official delegate tonight for the Yakima Nation. First, because of the direct and indirect impacts the proposed Millennium Bulk Terminal will have on the Yakima people and their treaty rights and resources, the Yakima Nation asks that the permitting agencies deny Millennium's applications to construct and operate the bulk terminal for coal export in Longview. The Millennium Bulk Terminal would permanently violate the Yakima Nation's rights to fish, hunt, and gather traditional foods. It would also potentially result in irreparable harm to the Yakima Nation's cultural resources. To be clear, the Yakima Nation will not negotiate nor agree to so-called mitigation for any violations of its treaty-reserved rights. With that said, if the permitting agencies decide to move forward with the environmental review process, the Yakima Nation reiterates its request for a comprehensive region-wide environmental analysis. We do commend the Department of Ecology on its decision to conduct a broad analysis of the impacts associated with the Cherry Point proposal, including evaluation of transportation-related impacts to the state and contributions to climate change, etc. We urge the permitting agencies here to exercise the same leadership and authority to the extent Millennium's permits are not denied outright. The Yakima Nation requests and expects the permitting agencies to analyze all impacts from the coal's origins in the Powder River Basin through our homelands to burning the coal in Asia for the Millennium Project and all others proposed. Further, Yakima Nation expects that the current contamination issues on site at the Port of Longview will be resolved in their entirety before any further environmental review is undertaken, so that a complete and accurate assessment can occur. I just must add that Yakima Nation reserves the right to supplement, amend, or revise any comments submitted throughout the scoping process.
And that was a sampling of some of the testimony at a scoping hearing on the proposed Millennium Bulk Coal Export Terminal planned for Longview. The hearing was held yesterday in the Tri-Cities. About 8,000 people visited Idaho's Insurance Exchange website on its opening day yesterday. Idaho Exchange Director Amy Dowd called the day a success despite first-day glitches. Dowd told the Associated Press a bottleneck in the federal exchange system that Idaho is using prevented even more people from visiting the Idaho site. She said about 10 employees in the Boise call center for the exchange fielded about 420 phone calls. Dowd anticipated in the weeks to come problems with the federal system will be worked out, response times on the exchange will go down, and people will find it easier to use. Idaho will be using the federal system until at least next year. People with questions about the exchange can contact the Boise Call Center at 855-944-3246. That number again, 855-944-3246, or access the exchange online at yourhealthidaho.org. Slow response times plagued the Washington State Health Insurance Exchange to the point where it was shut down shortly after it opened yesterday morning. Exchange spokesperson Michael Marchand said these types of problems are typical in launches of large and complex online systems. Marchand said the volume of visitors to the site wasn't the problem. In a news conference, Governor Jay Inslee said the federal government shutdown won't hold back the implementation of the insurance marketplace, saying this isn't some ideological discussion. This is about real people. Problems with the online system did not affect the telephone system Washington residents can use to get information or sign up for the exchange, and the online system was up and running again at 2 p.m. yesterday. Washington's exchange is on the web at wahealthplanfinder.org, and the phone number is 855-923-4633. That number again, 855-923-4633. About half the staff of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boise has been furloughed, which will cause attorneys to ask for postponements in civil cases. If the shutdown continues into next week, Idaho Department of Health and Welfare spokesperson Tom Shanahan said about 42,500 children and pregnant women could lose food benefits from the Women, Infants, and Children program. About half of the Idaho National Guard's employees will be off duty as long as the federal government shutdown lasts. Half of the 12-member Washington State Congressional delegation pledged to forego their salaries while the government is in partial shutdown. Two Democrats, Derek Kilmer and Suzanne Delbean, and three Republicans, Kathy McMorris Rogers, Doc Hastings, and Dave Reichert, will leave their salaries in the U.S. Treasury. Republican Representative Jamie Herrera Butler said for the duration of the shutdown, she will give her salary to a Vancouver charity that works against sex trafficking. Delbean also started returning 8.2% of her salary last March in response to the budget cuts known as the sequestration. Democratic Representative Rick Larson said through a spokesperson he was keeping his salary because he's working to end the impasse in Washington. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow. In 1909, the city of Pullman was nicknamed the Artesian City because it once had 20 artesian wells. However, the level of the Grand Ronde Aquifer under Whitman and Latah counties has been declining a foot every year for 50 years. It's that decline that's led to the creation of the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee in the early 1990s and led to the annual Palouse Basin Water Summit, this year held at Schweitzer Event Center in Pullman. Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee Executive Manager Steve Robichon gave his yearly overview of the situation early on during yesterday's Palouse Basin Water Summit. Focusing on water consumption, Robichon gave recent data on overall water use and outdoor water use on the Palouse.
Compared to 2012, you can see how the major pumping entities did. UI pumped 9.5% less in 2012 than they did in 2011, all the way up to Moscow, who pumped 6.3% more in 2012 than 2011. The aggregate change, if you add it up for all these pumpers, was about 1.5%. So 2012's total pumping was 1.5% more than 2011. 2012 non-baseline, so you can think of that as outdoor water use, compared to 2011, all the pumpers pumped more water outdoors in 2012 than 2011. So you don't have to wonder very far about why that might be, and it's probably because 2012 was warmer and drier than 2011, and sure enough, the climate charts will show that. So now let's move into 2013, this year, and compare it to last year, so we can kind of try to see how things are going to pan out at the end of this year. This is a chart of temperature by month during the irrigation season. To the left of the bar is 2012, between April and September. To the right of the bar is 2013. Red bars are higher than average temperatures. Blue bars are lower than average. You can see that 2013 summer or irrigation season, except for this last month, which everyone knows wasn't a very warm month, was warmer than average. So it was a warm summer for us. Precipitation, you can see again that it's kind of a mixed bag. September of this year, we had a lot more rain than we had previously, but it's kind of a mixed bag. Evapotranspiration, which is kind of a measure of how much water the plants use. The red bars are where the plants are using more than average water. The blue bars are less than average. You can see again, 2013, except for last month, the plants used more water. So if I had to look at those charts and say, what is 2013's water use going to be compared to 2012's, I would say 2013 is going to be more than 2012, just because of the weather that we experienced. Here is a very, very busy chart that shows monthly water use by pumping entity. So every bar that's above the zero line is pumping more in 2013 than they did in 2012. Everything below is pumping less, month by month. So you can see that there are a lot of bars above the zero line in June and July. So when we look again at the temperature, 2012 versus 2013, we had warmer months, we pumped more. Sure enough, easy to figure out. If you do the running total, which combines each monthly total up to the each running month, we see through August that in aggregate, the pumping is up 3.4% this year from last year. Now, I don't have pumping numbers for September except for the city of Pullman, which gave me their numbers today. City of Pullman in September pumped 20% less water this year than they did last year. So that's kind of a good sign for the other pumpers too. So I would expect by the end of 2013 that the total water use in 2013 will be less than the total water use was in 2012.
That was Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee Executive Manager Steve Robichon speaking at yesterday's 9th Annual Palouse Basin Water Summit in Pullman. Robichon also gave some data on more long-term trends.
How does that compare to 1992? Well, who cares about 1992? Well, my committee does, because that's the year that everyone in the basin got together and decided to manage according to a groundwater management plan. So all of the targets are based upon a baseline that's 1992. And here you see the numbers for comparisons to 1992. So again, UI comes in best with 57% less water use in 2012 than they used in 1992. Moscow and Pullman both are a little bit over now the 1992 pumping. Population, of course, is way higher than it was in 1992, and that's over 20 years ago. Aggregate change from 1992 is around 15%, so less water use, 15% from 1992.
While the shallower Wanapum Aquifer under Moscow, which provides drinking water in most of rural Latah County, is clearly recharged by surface water, the picture is less clear when it comes to the deeper Grand Ronde Aquifer, which underlies the region and spreads westward into eastern Washington. Robichon said research, such as the 2009 stream study by the Washington Department of Ecology, shows evidence of recharge between Palouse and Albion, but at another location in the Union Flat Creek area, it was evident there was no aquifer recharge, and there might, in fact, be aquifer discharge into the surface water. This led to a question from the audience about the presence of trace amounts of tritium, a radioactive isotope of hydrogen. Here, Robichon answers that question and another question about the impacts of climate on local water.
Tritium is something that you only see in the water since atomic testing occurred in the 1940s and 50s. So if you find tritium in the water, it means some of that water is 60 or 70 years or less old. And we've done studies, Predominantly, those studies have found no tritium in the deep water. We found tritium in the Grand Ronde Aquifer in two wells in Pullman. Pullman well number 5, which is out by Shopco, and Pullman well number 3, which is down by the train depot. So we found tritium in those two wells. We haven't found tritium in any of the other deeper aquifer wells. Now, just because you find tritium in a well doesn't necessarily mean that there's recharge going on a large scale. It just may mean that water is getting down
the well
into
somehow,
that well somehow.
Past an old seal or something.
Right, right. So we've done some studies with that. Tritium's more expensive to test for. This oxygen studies we can do much more cheaply than the tritium. We have to send the tritium out to get those analyzed.
But on the same stream study, did you look at tritium in the deeper aquifer?
No.
Okay.
With climate change coming down the pipeline, do you guys have any estimates for the added stress, the added pressure on our water supplies with added global warming? How is that going to come together and amplify each other?
There may be some climate change experts in this room. I'm not one of those. My understanding of, in this area, what climate change is most likely to do is actually make more precipitation occur, but the timing of the runoff will change and the type of the precipitation will change. So there'll be less snow, more total precipitation, and the runoff will be earlier in the year. So that will have an impact on recharge in terms of how long the water is around to recharge into the aquifer, but we haven't done any studies to try to quantify that yet.
That was Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee Executive Manager Steve Robichon speaking at yesterday's annual Palouse Basin Water Summit in Pullman. During a later section of the Palouse Basin Water Summit, hydrologist Robin Nimmer of Terra Graphics reported on the Framework Project, which is currently working with 7 new Washington Department of Ecology monitoring wells in Whitman County. Nimmer outlined what has been learned so far from these new monitoring wells and what can be learned in the future.
Okay, so this is the working boundary of the Palouse Groundwater Basin right now. We have a pretty good handle on the east and the southern portion of the boundary due to the crystalline rock. But towards the west and the north, we really don't have a very good handle on the boundary of the basin. 7 wells have been constructed that allow monitoring of groundwater levels within the lower aquifer hosted by the Grand Ronde Formation. The top of the Grand Ronde Formation is about 100 feet higher at the City Yard wells than the other wells, and the Wanapum is missing at that site. Wells have water level elevations in the range of 2246 to 2254 as measured on April 16th. And the lowest water level elevations are in the vicinity in Pullman. The topography on top of the Grand Ronde Formation does not appear to impact groundwater levels. So what that means is, remember, the City Yard wells are about 100 feet higher, but the water level elevations are all pretty similar. Information gained from the Butte Gap well supports the hypothesis that the lower aquifer is laterally continuous from the Palouse area to the Pullman-Moscow area. So these new wells provide opportunities for additional hydrogeologic analyses. For example, does the Butte Gap well respond to pumpage in the Moscow-Pullman or Palouse? Because now we know the Grand Ronde reaches there, but does the aquifer actually connect? Do the Flat Road and Grange wells respond to pumpage in Pullman WSU and or Union Flat Creek? To what extent do the City Yard wells respond to the South Fork of the Palouse River and pumpage of Pullman WSU? So all this information is going to be really great, and like Steve said, we have data loggers in all of these wells.
That was hydrologist Robin Nimmer of Terra Graphics speaking at the Palouse Basin Water Summit yesterday in Pullman. KRFP citizen journalist Rick Hensley contributed to this report. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 20% chance of showers tonight, mostly cloudy, low 38. Another 20% chance of showers tomorrow morning, but partly sunny, high 55. Mostly clear through Thursday night through Friday night and into Saturday as well, with a low Thursday night of 34. 37 for the low Friday night, highs 57 Friday and 61 on Saturday, mostly clear Saturday night, 42, and a 20% chance of showers on Sunday, partly sunny, high 59. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, we have a few clouds and 54 degrees outside. Oh, that's been reduced in the last hour to 51 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is the sustainability segment, and that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. We'll have encounters at around 7:30, and then music begins with World Waves with Catherine Bonzo at 8 o'clock, World Music, the Grateful Dead Show at 9:30, and we now have The Inner Side at its new time, a half hour earlier at 11 p.m., music and entertainment throughout the night here at KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis, and Rick Hensley, Helen Yost, and Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. It's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to sign up or to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow, including helping with our Full Power campaign, finishing up raising money to put an antenna on Paradise Ridge. Have a good night. I'm Lee Robartis. This is KRFP Moscow.